This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on.
You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
I should know it's on.
It's on.
All right, so we were.
Damn hat on straight, man.
Is it crooked?
All right, let's go.
Cut to it, crew. What's going on? What's going on, Smitty? How you doing? I got a question for you.
Whoa, why are you already laughing? This is a whole podcast. Like, I'm supposed to have questions.
I'll tell you why, because I'm on the microphone. You know how that
backstage,
goes.
You're becoming a regular now.
Hey, man.
You're becoming a regular. You're not backstage Joe anymore.
A lot of things happen, man. A lot of things go on.
Right. Question for you. Have you ever had any weird fan interactions? And do any...
Several.
Any recent ones? Walk me through. Walk us through.
I don't think it was a... I don't even know what it was.
Okay.
Weird.
Super.
Weird.
It was at the gas station the other day.
Okay.
You were with me?
Yeah, the three of us were in the car together.
Yeah. Went inside because the pump said, please wait. Never stick your card in where it says, please wait.
Words to live by.
Fortune cookie.
I'm like, nah, I'm going to go inside.
Yeah.
So went inside, gave some money, filled it up. Thought it was pretty cool. I didn't know. Pulled up. Hey, let me put such and such on 8. Mm-hmm. Come outside, finish. Close my gas tank. Hop in the car, vroom, turn on my car. Then there's a gentleman, pulls up in a car. He had his homeboy in the back seat, which was a dog. A D-O-G, roof, roof dog. Not his doggy dog, but an animal. His companion. And pulled up and said, hey, I got a question. I said, yes. Then he goes, oh, I figured it out. And pretty much after that, I was lost.
mind you, we have no idea what this question
was.
We had no clue.
Ask him a question.
No, he didn't ask me a question.
No.
He pulled up, and I thought he was like, come on, bro, let's not play the lost light.
Yeah.
Other dudes don't ask other dudes, hey, are you lost? You know, hey, do you know where? No, I don't.
Yeah.
That's my go-to.
Yeah.
So you can ask. I can be in front of an ice cream shop, and you say, hey, do you know what an ice cream shop is? And I'm like, nope, not from around here.
Uh-huh.
That's my mm-mm.
So he rolls up, says he figured it out.
Says he figured it out. And then, so now, of course, I'm in the back seat. You're riding shotgun. Mm-hmm. And we look over, and now we're kind of interested. And like,
what is he talking about?
Because it was a showdown now.
Right?
This guy is quiet. Steve's just sitting there because we don't know what's going on.
Clueless.
And so, like, there's this 5-second pause where it's like it's a showdown.
And so then he looks at Steve and goes, you good?
Right.
Now, that ain't the answer. When you ask me, am I good?
Those fighting words.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Those fighting words.
It implies you're not.
Right.
Yes.
Or that we have an issue.
Yes.
Kids call it beef.
Right. So he says, you good? I said, you good.
Yeah.
I'm good. Now, when you say, generally when you say no, that's where the problems start.
So for the most part, when someone says you good, it's not a greeting for you.
Hell
what
nah.
is you what uh-huh. is what is your disposition on you good? Because I've heard other people go to someone, hey yo, what's up, man? You good? Is it the way that someone says it, or is it just the words you good with a question mark behind it?
That generally is a we got problems.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Do you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
And my answer is yes. SOB, I know we got problems.
Right. So if I dapped you up right now, like, yeah, what's up, baby? You good? You taking that as...
We good because we're friends.
But if it's a... Okay, so that helps. So now if I'm a stranger and I say...
How about this?
You good?
If you're a stranger, you roll up in your car and I don't know you and you don't know me.
Right.
And you say, hey, yo.
Now, that's a whole different context.
And you say, hey, yo, you good?
Man, you got, what he got shotgun? Right.
My response?
Right. Right.
Is not going to be yes. It's going to be, you good?
Yeah.
So you see, you asking me, am I good? And I'm asking, I didn't answer, did I? I asked you, are you good? Mm-hmm. Now, what comes out of your mouth after that? That's when they say this fireworks.
That sets the table for next steps.
Right. Yes.
Bringing this thing back,
full circle.
Back right. Full circle to this individual with you good that we didn't know at a gas
who pulled
station,
up.
Who pulled mm-hmm. up.
And
awkward exchange.
Yes. So he goes, you good? Yeah, I'm good. You good? Yeah, man.
And his response.
After I said you good.
This is where, because I want to know what his narrative is when he pulled off. Because this man's response after Steve said, are you good, was, yeah, I'm used to
I'm
it.
I'm used to it.
We're and like, rolled off. And
what are you like, used to?
What are you used to? Like, here's what happens. Again, Gerard and I, we're out with Steve a lot. So we run across situations like this all the time.
The most awkward and silly ass individuals, for lack of better words.
People have a scenario played out in their mind when they walk up to, say, Steve. In their mind, they're going to say, hey, how you doing? I'm good. How are you? Maybe I get a picture. We have a few minutes conversation. We walk off. This dude had that in his mind. But when the conversation didn't go with, hey, how's it going? It went with, you good?
It was an awkward way to get out of conversation.
Shook. Like, he was shook. Because usually, Steve is the one that says, yeah, it's fine. I get it all the time. And, you know, he's cordial and nice and has but
it depends on how you come up to me. Now, if you come up to me expecting I owe you something, oh, you're going to get some old on.
Where does this rank amongst your awkward fan or just individual reactions?
Well, this one ranks in the category of, this one I stay in the house a lot.
I'm used to that.
and because what generally happens is, and I think I've done a better job, but there are times here in Charlotte I'm known for not being very approachable. And a lot of it is because I don't want to say been burned, but I have been approached at times where it's really just taken away from what I'm currently doing. Mm-hmm. Right? And my oldest boy, Peyton, I remember we were I broke my leg, and Mario's like, you need to go do something. So I started coming to his lunch. He was in, I think, the second grade. Now, Peyton is 22 years old. So I was going to lunch and sitting there at lunch, and one of these kids knew who I was, so he had, like, my rookie or second year in the league, he had a card. And he says, hey, Mr. Smith, can you sign a card for me? I was like, sure, all right. And Peyton had this such defeated look. Peyton was in the second grade. Mm-hmm. He looks at me and says, Dad, are you here to sign autographs or are you here to have lunch with me? Think about that. Mm-hmm. Think about how a seven-year-old connects that. And what it really told me is he's like, I don't care how many damn passes you catch, Bob.
Yeah.
I just want you to be my dad.
Yep.
And from there, I've tried to balance that I don't go to events for your kids.
Yeah.
I go for my kids. Yeah. And I'm not trying to be rude, but I've been at taking my kids and out of the family and bowling, and people have been upset because I won't stop bowling with my family and go over to their lane to be part of their birthday party because that'll make their kids' day. But I mean, ultimately, I understand the responsibility, but ultimately, God is going to judge me on how
you're right.
I tend to my flock before I start going to other mother flocks.
Yeah.
How I handle my kids and my present for my family. I can't be this great superstar football player for all these other people and be a dirtbag at the house.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when I'm out with my fam, I don't have time.
You off. You turned off.
I'm off. I'm like the bank.
Right.
And there are some people who respect it, some people who get it, And I've had people who cuss me out.
Yeah, you don't have a responsibility to be always being on for everybody.
No. You know why? And here's my philosophy. If the bank ain't open 24 hours a day.
Neither are you. What? But you know what, though? What? I'm used to it.
Yes, he is. Who we got?
Coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got London Fletcher, a 16-year NFL vet. He's a four-time Pro Bowler. He's an NFL All-Pro. And he's currently an NFL analyst for CBS Sports. London Fletcher on the Cut to It podcast.
Appreciate y'all having me.
We appreciate you being on. So our first segment is called Get Iced Up. You know Smitty well, so I have no idea what he has up his sleeve. So Smitty, go ahead and give him the first one.
You ready?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready, man. I'm ready.
All right. Yeah. So what was your first concert you went to?
Back in the day, it was a rap concert. It was a mixture of rap and old school, like UTFO. I don't know if you remember those. You might be a little too young to remember UTFO.
Yeah, UTFO.
Yeah. You're a little too young.
And West Coast.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, like, see, people on the East Coast, they know about UTFO, man.
So what is UTFO?
Oh, yeah. Fairy Tale Lover. See, you on the West Coast, see? Yeah. Oh, man, yeah, you got to have to Google that. Google them, man, UTFO.
So basically, your first concert was Brian McKnight. Is that what you just telling
me? Hey, but I did go to a Brian McKnight concert. And the crazy thing, when I went that UTFO, oh,
Roxanne,
why did my
Roxanne.
Mother?
Now I know. Roxanne. Now,
yeah.
Sorry.
See, you Googled that, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I had to.
Yeah, had to Google it, but it's, I know it, but it's literally.
I know Roxanne, but I didn't
I
know
do too,
who
but
did
that's
it.
That yeah. Fast forward.
Hey. My mother took me to the concert. That's how crazy.
Oh my!
What was your first concert, Smitty? What was yours?
Probably went to see E40.
E40. Is that sign language?
I didn't go. My first concert was until I was an adult. It was a West Coast concert.
Mine was Rough Riders Cash Money. I remember I was 15 years old.
Where were they at?
Here in Charlotte, the old Coliseum.
The old Coliseum.
We sitting in the very top, so I'm like. Why does it smell funny up here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. Hey, but I'll tell you what. The best concert I ever went to was Prince in Cleveland at the Cavaliers Arena. Man, this was Prince put on a show, a heck of a show. He got about a 10-minute standing ovation after he left and he ended up coming back out and doing an encore performance. He was, oh, man. You talk about a concert? Yeah, that was a bad concert.
Another really good concert I went to that I was just amazed at what he was able to do. Stevie Wonder. What that brother can do blind, I can't do with 10 set of eyes.
Hey, you know they say Stevie really can see, man.
Not with that hairline. I know he can.
He walking around.
That boy hairline so jacked up. He got to be blind.
Somebody see
his braids is at damn near the back of his head. He got ducked.
Hey, man.
You know he blind because his head, it go forehead, ski ball, hair.
All right, man. You know what? That might be. You got a good point. That right there tells the story. Yeah. The question. That's the answer.
Yeah.
Stevie, he's blind. Yeah. You.
Right. And this is how you know he blind, because if he could really see, he put on, you know, Oakley got some nice glasses. That brother be wearing blue blockers. So, no.
You see.
So, anyway, I have to digress. So,
just some blue blockers. Yeah. I remember the commercial.
Boy got received. So, what's your favorite item of clothing?
Oh, man. Golf shirts. Yeah, because I'm always, golf. I would say golf clothing.
Okay. I know this one, but I had to ask, and I was cheesing the whole time I was typing this up. Do you prefer swimming in the pool or ocean?
Pool.
Why are you chuckling?
You tell me why, man. Pool, man.
That boy's scared of the ocean.
Yeah, man. We'll mess with the ocean, look, man.
I'm the same way, though. No, I'm cool with that ocean.
No. Mm. That London is a ferocious linebacker.
Scared of the ocean.
Man, get his ass in that water in that ocean.
I bet you don't go further than probably your knees, right?
Man, I go a little bit further, but that's not
you can't go further than what you can see.
No, me and my daughter, my oldest, she just like me. Because the rest of the family, they want to take a cruise. Her and I, we like, listen.
No.
Y'all go do y'all thing. Her and I, we're good. We'll stay back. Y'all have a good time. We are not with that. We don't want to be in a cruise. I don't want to be out there in that water like that.
You got taught that. That's the same way in my family.
Yeah. And I can swim, but
he's prefer with it. You prefer it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, would you like ranch or blue cheese? Neither. Yeah. You don't want it. When I was typing this up, I was smiling and laughing. I'm like, I already know this answer, but I'm going to ask anyway. So what was your favorite team growing up? Any sport?
Oh, man, the Browns. Yeah, the Cleveland Browns. I love the Browns growing up. Back when they had Bernie Kosar, Webster Slaughter, Ernest Byner, Kevin Mack, when they were going to the AFC Championship game, they went to 3 AFC Championship games, lost to the Broncos in all 3. I hate John Elway, still don't like him to this day.
That's deep-rooted right there.
I love the Browns so much, man. So you know how you always have that one friend who wants to go against the grain, regardless, like if everybody likes blue, he's going to be the one that likes red.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was the one guy who all of us like the Browns, but he wants to – out of all the players, his favorite player is John Elway. So we're going to school one morning. It's in middle school. It's cold in Cleveland, like January. Walking to school, he gets to talking. And he like to talk a lot. So he's talking about John Elway. He's like, Elway, Elway. I said, listen, man. You say Elway one more time.
One more.
I'm hitting you in your mouth. you say Elway one more time.
He didn't say it.
He said L. He didn't get the way out. Man, I hit him right in his mouth, man. Dude, man, nobody want to hear no John Elway. You couldn't be a John Elway fan in Cleveland. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. That's how much I love the Browns back then.
So then who was your favorite athlete that you admired growing up as a kid?
I really didn't have just one guy. I used to love Eric Dickerson as a running back. Used to like a lot more, a lot of the Browns play. I didn't have, Dickerson was probably my favorite guy. Other than that, it was just more like players.
Me and you are neighbors. We play golf together. We've come over each other's house. Our kids have played together. But one of the interesting things about this sit down, don't cut to it, is the London Fletcher that I've played against on the football field and the London Fletcher I play golf with, we roll together, played a lot of sports, our kids have played together. But the London Fletcher that I've got an opportunity to do the research of, I don't know. I'm learning a lot. And so one of the things I kind of wanted to say to you, I feel like I've shortchanged our relationship, man. It really, I've learned so much about you that I think a little bit because I admire you and see you as a mentor. Our listeners get opportunity to learn about the London Fletcher and how you grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. But also for me, man, I get to learn about you. So I'm just honored to be able to do this. But also, again, say that the perspective I've gained about you, man, is the next time we play golf, bro, I'm just going to be staring at you because it's like, gosh, So, I mean, I'll just get into it. I said it. You grew up in the place you're from, your hometown is Cleveland, Ohio. But how did Cleveland, Ohio shape your perspective of how you see the world today?
It shaped my perspective. Everything, the way I see the world was shaped, during my time in Cleveland from my early childhood up until when I finally left Cleveland for good I moved out of Cleveland finally at around 2006, I want to say 2007. But, growing up in the inner city, like a lot of people, inner city Cleveland, you have your different challenges that you face, but you have to, Cleveland kind of hardens you. It's a blue collar town, but it's also, you know, it's just a rough city. You have to be mentally and physically tough to survive. When you walk out of your house, you know, I leave out my door and crack, people selling crack right on the corner, right, you know, next door over. A lot of drug, gang violence. I mean, I've seen, you know, just a lot of shootings, just all the things that you shouldn't have to see as a young kid and have to navigate as soon as you leave your house. You know, it's just, it was tough. So you had to definitely be mentally tough and physically tough because you'd be challenged, you know, physically, a lot of fighting, things like that. And it definitely tests your mettle. So man, when you think about that, especially as a young kid, being, having to deal with that on a daily basis, it definitely makes you stronger.
We have to take a break, and more than anything, we gotta pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. You got check.
I love Cut to It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut to It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut to It.
Facebook.
Cut to It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. cuttoitpodcast.com.
I mean, you had a lot of big events impact you. Just like, how did you overcome that? Because, you know, just as a dad, I can't look at my kid. When I look at my kids and I see who they are, I cringe at imagining what I've been through, you know, because I know what it's done to me.
Yeah.
So I know what it's done to me. I'm like, man, I wouldn't want to, you know, if I had the choice, obviously this is all hypothetical, but I had the choice. Like I really put myself in that position. I go, man, it has impacted me. How did you get through it?
You know, thinking about my kids and them, I was growing up on a country club and how I grew up where, man, we barely could, there was times where, you know, we didn't have much to eat. Just the contrast and just how naive they are to just the challenges that people face in this world. I mean, from the time I was in college, we had a lot of deaths that happened in my family. A couple suicides, you know, with my aunts, two aunts committed suicide, all within the span of probably about a year of each other. Then my, when I was in college, my freshman year in college, used to get, when you get an off-campus ring, you knew it was like you get the double ring. And I used to always kind of worry about the double rings that you would get off campus. Actually, I'm going to take you back even further than that because my older sister, so I'm one of five kids. My mom, she had five kids. I was the middle child. I have an older brother who's 9 years older than me. Had an older sister who was 6 years older than me. I'm the middle child. Got a sister that's 5 years younger than me and then a sister that's 7 years younger than me. So when I was 11 years old, my sister who was not 6 years older than me, she was murdered at 18 years old. She was raped and left dead by some railroad tracks at the age of 18 years old. I was 11 years old. And that had a tremendous impact on me, my mom, just our family in general, where you have, you know, here she is, you know, should be graduating high school and going off to college, and she was murdered. And she was into the street life at an early age, probably around the time she was 13 years old. She was, you know, hanging out, doing things that she shouldn't have been doing, using drugs, just something that you wouldn't think a 13-year-old should be doing. My older brother, he was selling drugs in and out of jail, incarcerated, things like that. My mom, with my sister's death, that had an impact on us. We were all parents, so can you imagine if we lost a child, what that would do to us and what type of impact that would have on her? So at a few years after my sister was murdered, my mom, you know, didn't know how to cope with that. She turned to using drugs, and I found out about that. She started smoking crack at when I was like, I found out I was like 14 years old when I found out about my mom and her situation. And that just, man, that shook me to the core. I was, man, that hurt. Like, what? Just to, know that your mom is using drugs and the way that drug, what it did to families, what it did to people, how it destroyed families. So it was just a lot of challenges and difficult time that you start to deal with, that I was dealing with from the time I was 11 years old and through college, really. Just like, man, you know, somebody shouldn't have to deal with these types of situations. And freshman year of college, had freshman year to my sophomore year of college, we had, you know, four relatives who died. One was my younger cousin was murdered. Aunt died of a heart attack, and two other aunts died of suicide. So it's just like, man, just so much stuff that it can overwhelm you. It can have you question all kinds of things. You know, just some difficult situations that myself and my family, we had to go through over a period of time.
How do you carry all of that?
As black men, you know, they don't want you to, you got to kind of be tough, not really show your true emotions. I went through some in college. I used to like have anger issues. They actually sent me to counseling for some anger issues. Cause you know, I would, when I was playing basketball or football, I would definitely have some moments where I let my frustrations out, you know, on somebody in practice or on the court, on the practice field or whatever, because, you know, you've just been carrying that burden around for so long. In high school, you know, maybe a lot of fights I would get into. It was just dealing with those. That was my way of kind of dealing with those things, coping with it. I didn't cry. It just, like, I would just let out my frustrations through fights or things like that. Being where I'm at now, at 45 years old, I understand how if you let things fester and manifest, how something really small could, you know, blow up to something bigger. But it's more of a byproduct of something else. But not having, you know, not knowing how to deal with those things and really being able to talk to somebody about the hurt I was dealing with, or, you know, where, especially when you, you're 14 years old and your mom is not the mom that you knew for so many years. She was there physically, but, you know, emotionally and being that supportive person that you needed and that I needed in my life, that has an impact on you.
You were part of a really unique mentoring program. There was a couple, Charlotte Kramer and Leonard Schwartz. What was that mentoring program like?
Yeah, so Charlotte Kramer, Mrs. Kramer, she adopted our sixth grade graduating class in this program called the I Have a Dream program. It was started by a gentleman named Eugene Lang in New York, and he did a similar deal in New York City with some kids graduating from elementary. And what she did, she promised us, this is back in like 1987, it was like $250,000 that she donated or she set aside for us. I don't know how much that would be in today's money, but it was geared towards
whole bunch.
So it was a lot of money that was geared towards, hey, this is money for you all to go to utilize for your college tuition or secondary education once you graduate high school. This was a white Jewish lady who wanted to give back. She had done very well. Her husband was, his name was Mr. Schwartz. During that time, they didn't just say, hey, here's this money. We'll see you when you graduate. But they also provided each one of us, it was like 72 kids. So they got each one of us a mentor. And I was kind of Mr. Schwartz mentee because out of default, because I was so bad. They were like, we gotta give a special, give him a special one. So I was the crazy thing is like, I was like a straight A student, A's and B's, but again, I had a lot of anger inside of me. So I was a challenging kid. So he was my mentor. And they provided us with mentors throughout that that time frame to help us navigate everything we were going through. Out of those 72 kids, probably only about 15 truly took advantage of the opportunity that was there. You know, a lot of the girls dropped out of high school, had or junior high, whatever, had babies. You know, same thing with a lot of the boys, drug selling. Some were had early deaths. You know, dropped out of high school or school. Just a lot of different challenges that took place between the time she made that commitment and when it was time to graduate high school. So not only a small percentage actually took advantage of what she had there, but she they did so much for me because they not only helped me with my college, they also helped me, you know, they paid for me to go to a private high school to be able to utilize my athletic ability. It's like, hey, you know, we're going to help you with some high school, your high school tuition to go to this Catholic high school, which that really changed the course of my life and you know, played an integral part in why I'm here, where I'm at right now.
That had to be a little challenging.
Yeah, that's different.
A knucklehead?
Oh, yeah. It was definitely a culture shock because I transferred to the school in the middle of my 10th grade year. So I actually transferred in the middle between semesters. And I go from a Cleveland public school to a Catholic high school. And just the discipline, the, you know, I couldn't get away with what I was getting away with at the Cleveland public school. I couldn't, you know, if I didn't show up in class in the Cleveland public school, it wasn't any different. If I, you know, didn't, nobody cared. It wasn't called home. If I cut school that day, whatever, nobody called home. Man, if I was 5 minutes late to a class, it was an issue. At that Catholic high school, not only that, I had to take, you know, I take two buses to school. So I went from walking to school to now having to have the discipline to get up early, get on those, take those two buses to school. The, just the rigor and the discipline. It was difficult that first semester, major adjustment, just the type of kids that were there. Most of them had been in Catholic private school for the time they were elementary. So they had been, you know, used to this, coming in there from my background, I was rough to say the least. I was a challenger. They definitely, you know, had their work cut out with me. Man, it really helped me because you're dealing with, I go from dealing with the people who are in the same situation as me, having the same challenges, just one perspective on the world to, you go to there where you, there's multi-ethnic, you know, different, socioeconomic backgrounds. You had, you know, some wealthy kids there, and then you had some kids who were poor who needed financial assistance. So you had a range from an economic standpoint, but it just helped me be able to deal with more people and understand that, you know, the life is not black and white.
But how important was sports growing up in terms of collegiate opportunity for you to, you know, for you to go off to college? How important was sports to, for you?
Man, it was everything. Even though I knew, hey, you had to go to college to, in order to play pro, you had to do this, you had to, you know, I was very familiar with like Prop 48 and all that type of stuff. So all the different things that was going to be required for me in order to, you know, get a college scholarship. I wanted to play college sports, college basketball in particular. So I learned very quickly once I got to that school, hey, I gotta do right in the classroom. You know, I saw athletics as my way out. I saw college. I didn't see academics, which is sad. It was, hey, sports is going to be my way out of this situation.
You say it's sad. Well, why is that sad?
Because we don't emphasize the amount of money that's available to you from a merit-based scholarships or academic scholarship. It's not even, it's so much more. Athletic money is only like a fraction of what is available to compared to the academic money that's available. It's far easier to get your school paid for academically than it is athletically.
So you said you had dreams of playing college basketball.
Yes, he did.
Played football and basketball in high school. You aspired to play collegiately. Which one was your first love?
I didn't know that.
Basketball, man. Basketball. I'm a hooper, man. Yeah.
Let me tell you something about London and basketball. He has film of himself playing basketball.
Hey.
He transferred from a VHS cassette.
So he got all the old.
I'm talking
hey,
about,
man, I got my stuff.
I got a squint. Now, here's the best part, though. Yeah. Oh, let me give you a visual aid. Close your eyes, people. London Fletcher. London's, I'll give you 5'10". London's 5'10", 240 pounds.
Not anymore. I used to be.
I wasn't going to go there.
Give you some grace.
240 pounds, wearing the same exact shorts that John Stockton and Karl Malone used to wear when they were with Utah Jazz. When they were delivering the mail.
Hot shorts.
Hey, Steve. Yes. When you saw that video, though, you was a little bit surprised by skills, though. You thought I was going to be just a brute out there.
Here's what I like to say. When he was over at the house and he showed me, I was surprised and like, wow, look at London. But I couldn't give
him any credit. Why not?
Because me and London are really good friends, but we competitive now.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if we playing golf, give me a stroke. No, I ain't give you no stroke. Come on. No, I ain't give you no stroke. You didn't get it. Right. You should have called that pass over the middle. Me and London still talk. Uh-huh. If they show a highlight of me, when London was with Washington, on my football life, there's a play I'm going across the middle. London hit me. But London actually hit me so hard, he knocked himself off of me. I took credit as...
You knocked him down.
I knocked him down. That's how competitive we are. I group text those group of men at like 6 a.m. when I saw it because I was running. It's like it was on and I was watching work and then doing work. Sometimes the ads come on and it was my football life. Like, and I saw that, sent the group text like, yeah, look at this. That's how competitive we are.
Hey man, I didn't want to catch a fine. I also know his wife. You know, I was like, I'm gonna take it easy on Steve.
That's what he was thinking when he was trying to knock the snot out of me. I don't want to knock. Yeah. I just want to lock a rib loose, but. I was really surprised how athletic, because he was still a linebacker.
Yeah.
He was a big boned dude.
Oh, yeah.
He ain't like the Charlie Ward, Nate Robinson.
No.
You know who you remind me of? If you go back and watch Charles Barkley games when he was younger.
Oh.
Bro, he can move.
Yeah.
London.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was a surprise. He was moving. That boy had them high knickerbockers. In the short shorts, but I was pretty. I would say now on here, it's on recording for a middle linebacker, and I believe one of the best ones in the game, mm-hmm. who has the same amount and slightly better numbers than former Raven
number 52.
London can move, and that was the part that I was really shocked on. the biggest shocker that London has film of himself playing basketball.
That was the biggest shocker. Like, man, what is this dude walking around with this footage?
Like, look. But because of the position London play, I get and I understand it, right? And also, too, the competitiveness of the type of folks we are. Mm-hmm. We're always going at it. We will play golf and bet who can finish this hole. Can you knock it in your corner? Right. It's just to spin someone else's quarter.
Oh yeah.
We will bet, man. We will bet a round of golf, and the person has to buy the wings. Like, oh, we in the clubhouse. who's buying? Oh, I'm not buying, London. I'm not buying because I won.
Right.
Yeah. But it's a great, healthy relationship. It pushes us. I mean, we were, when I was first retired, man, we used to walk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Steve, you start working too much, man. You stop golfing. I think he's running from me. I think you're actually running from me. That's what it is more than anything.
I am.
London said you're running.
You're always talking about you working. You're busy. Now, I think you're running.
I am running. When the spring come, I'm going to run up on your ass on the golf course. How about that?
Wherever you want to play, I'm always game for some golf.
Okay, cool. I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Cut through it. Cut through it. Let's get down to it. Cut through it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from CutToItPodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
We know London Fletcher, the Super Bowl winning St. Louis, Washington Redskins, Buffalo Bills. But you went to a Division I school, Catholic school, and basketball scholarship. Good, take us through.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, my first love was basketball. I didn't play football until my senior year of high school. Had some Division I scholarship offers for football and basketball. But my heart was set on playing basketball at that point in time. So I ended up taking the basketball scholarship to St. Francis in Pennsylvania. And I get up there, after that year of high school football, I really just did that so I wouldn't have any regrets when I got older, you know, the woulda, shoulda, coulda, like, oh, I should have did this and all that. So I got to college my freshman year, and I'm watching, I went to a football game at St. Francis, and I'm watching these guys out there playing. I'm like, man, these dudes weak, man. I need to be out here playing. I started missing football. I wanted to play. And I actually was like, man, I should be playing football. But I didn't think about playing at St. Francis because the head coach of the football team was also the athletic director. And I did not care for him, man. He was just not somebody I liked at all. I didn't want to play for him. So stayed there my freshman year. I decided to transfer in the middle of my sophomore year. So I was like, if I wanted to play football. So if you go from a Division I to a Division two or three school, you don't have to sit out.
I
can play immediately. So I transferred to John Carroll. Part of the reason why I chose John Carroll, it was close to home. It was only like 15, 20 minutes from where I grew up. My mom's situation was getting a lot worse. I wanted to be there for my younger sisters. I just needed to be home. So it was like everything was kind of lining up. My high school football coach was the defensive coordinator at John Carroll. My high school basketball coach had become the head basketball coach at John Carroll. So things were just lining up to where it made sense for me to transfer to John Carroll. I did that and was able to play. Play right away.
John Carroll requires you to average a GPA of 3.55 in high school. The average SAT score, 1080, highest up to 1280. Mm-hmm. I only write checks that big.
Steve, here's the kicker. Out of high school, I wouldn't have qualified for Carroll.
It was the first.
Yeah, fresh out of high school. No, I wouldn't have, my GPA would not have been what it needed to be or SAT. Not because it just, I wouldn't have qualified, but once I got to college at St. Francis, I was, for some reason, college was easier, you know, academically for me. I made the honor roll, dean's list, and everything at St. Francis. So they looked at my collegiate grades and was like, oh, he's, you know, he can handle the work. So I transferred. They allowed me to transfer based off my college grades, not my high school transcript.
I want to give context to this to your college. Some of the notable alumni, the late, great Don Shula. Now, he's not looking like the great offense coordinator right now with the New England Patriots, but Josh McDaniels. Mm-hmm. And then you got this guy who, just the founder of Cable, Chuck Dole.
How do you become the founder of Cable?
I don't know, but he's a billionaire, right? Not even a gazillionaire.
Like, you invented Cable?
Whoa. It's not like, oh, you know, let's do this Cable.
Right.
Right. So that's the college that you transfer to play football. And we know they're not known for football, but they're doing a pretty good job.
When I went there, playing football professionally wasn't on my radar. At that point in time, I was like, John Carroll, great academic school. I was focused on getting my education, graduating college, and being able to have a better life. That was my mindset. I wanted to play sports, but you don't go to Carroll thinking you're about to go to the NFL or NBA or whatever the case may be. It was like, hey, if I get my degree from Carroll, I'll be set up pretty good in Ohio because of, you know, just I knew the connections I would have with the degree from John Carroll. So, you know, the other stuff as far as excelling and making it to the NFL, that was icing, man. That was, like I said, all the stuff I had survived from, you know, man, I had a double barrel shotgun pointed in my face at point blank range, you know, gun pulled on me. So by the time I got through, you know, college, man, all this stuff is just extra now. You know, the NFL, that's gravy.
House money.
Yeah.
And if I'm playing with house money, means I'm not supposed to be here.
Right.
I'm supposed to be dead. I'm supposed to be in jail. So if I'm not supposed to be here, really, I ain't got nothing to lose.
Right. And also not even not having anything to lose. You just look at the situation totally different where somebody else, that situation may overwhelm them.
Yes.
A challenge that you may face, a situation that you may face, it doesn't affect you the same way, and you take the situation serious, but you're not going to show the same type of emotions or reactions or the panic that somebody else who may not have had the same type of challenges growing up. So, you know, a lot of times people will, like even my wife's, you know, family, they're like, man, your demeanor is so, you know, like your demeanor, you're just so even keeled and calm about certain situations. In my mind, I'm saying, man, this is a problem. It has to be solved regardless. I've gone through some, like, this is not something to panic over.
Leonard, our last segment is called The Deep Three. There are three questions that just take us beyond who you are as a football player to get at a deeper level. So, Smitty, go ahead and ask them the first one.
If you can tell any young kid in Cleveland right now who dreams of playing the NFL, but doesn't feel like he has a shot, what would you say?
I would say always believe in yourself. Don't let someone else's, you know, doubt or whatever negativity creep into your mind, but you have to have confidence in yourself. You never know. There's too many examples of guys making it in pro sports, regardless of where they come from. Everybody's not coming from the Power Five conferences anymore. You've had, you know, examples of guys coming from Division III schools like myself or NAIA. There's so many different routes that you can take to be noticed. So just continue to believe in yourself, prepare, and when you get that opportunity, be ready to show your skills. But you know, never think you're not going to get an opportunity.
You have a legacy on the field, London. What is the legacy that you are creating now?
My legacy is with my children. You know, that's the thing that when I'm gone, that's the thing that I think, you know, I have to be most concerned with is my children, my three children, my two girls, Paige and Brooke, and then my son, Steele. How will they be as adults? How will they be as parents? You know, what kind of things I can instill with them and instill in them to hope that they're better people, that they're, you know, doing the things that I would be proud of. You know, that's really the legacy that I think about most.
If you could write a letter to Charlotte Cramer and the Schwartz, what would it contain?
Well, at first it would contain just a tremendous amount of gratitude and appreciation for them caring enough to give back, because it wasn't something that they had to do. It was something that they wanted to do. And for Mrs. Cramer to feel the need to give back and say, you know what, I want to be able to make these kids' lives better or help make these kids' lives better. Just would be a tremendous amount of gratitude and appreciation for them, because they didn't have to do it and she chose to do it and they chose to do it. So it would just be a tremendous amount of appreciation.
London never missed a game. Now, I know you missed some games, but were there times where you just didn't feel it for whatever reason and you played through it?
Oh, yeah, you feel it all the time. I wouldn't say necessarily because of injuries. It's like it may be because of the way the season's going. Shoot, sometimes you don't feel it. You start playing and all of a sudden the game gets out of hand really quickly.
Yeah.
And you're like, goodness gracious, you look up. Yeah, it's still the first quarter.
So do you have to fake it till you feel it almost?
You can't go across the middle faking it, right? That's how you get out. That's how you get.
I did it on purpose to get your reaction.
Nah, you don't do that. It's just one of those things, just like any other job, right? Mm-hmm. It's tough, and you got to white knuckle it. Mm-hmm. You got to figure it out, and you got to problem solve and go about your day. There are factors on why and how, but there's nothing you could do about it. You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut To It. Cut To It with Steve Smith Sr. That is me. Is a production of Cut To It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut To It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut To It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production manager Sarah Pollock, theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.